Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new monthly edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes today. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is the Bloomberg Daybreak Asia podcast. I'm Doug Krisner. You can join Brian Curtis and myself for the stories making news and moving markets in the APAC region. You can subscribe to the show anywhere you get your podcast and always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business app.
Joining us is Arun Sundaram, Vice President and Senior Equity Analyst at CFRA Research, to take a closer look at Amazon. Arun, thank you very much for joining us. So two lines getting a lot of attention in the Amazon earnings: the 17% gain in AWS sales, which we just mentioned, a big beat there. And then the somewhat weaker forecast for the current quarter on overall sales. It would seem to suggest that the consumer is getting a little more cautious, right?
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm not overly worried about the cautious guidance. You know, Amazon has typically been a company to guide conservatively over the last several quarters. And if you look at their track record, you know, they've actually been beating very significantly compared to their guidance. So I wouldn't look too much into the guidance. I think that, you know, a highlight this quarter really is on that AWS growth line of 17%. You know, that's a 4-point acceleration from Q4. And that's actually more acceleration than Microsoft and Google. So even though Amazon has a larger cloud business with AWS, it's also growing faster, or its growth is accelerating faster than its peers. So in our view, this was a standout quarter. You know, I'm a little concerned the stock is not up as more than it is right now. I think this should be a stock that's probably, you know, should be up 10 to 15% after hours.
Well, the data support your view because Amazon's actual results have beaten estimates for adjusted EPS by about 63% on average. I think that's the highest margin among the Mag 7. But to the point about continued growth in AWS, one of the things that Amazon did say today is that the company sees an annual run rate for AWS at around $100 billion. That's annual. So if you look at this quarter, or the last quarter, I should say, at $25 billion times four, that gets you to $100 billion, which basically says everything that we saw in Q1 will remain in stasis for the remainder of the year. Doesn't that concern you at all?
No, I mean, that run rate has been increasing, you know, each quarter. So if you look at Q4, AWS was a $24 billion business. If you go to Q3 of last year, it's a $23 billion business. So that run rate has been increasing, which bodes well for the company. I think what's very interesting is that Amazon said that generative AI is running on a multi-billion dollar run rate. So if assuming AWS is at a $100 billion run rate, you know, a few billion dollars means that, you know, generative AI is only making up maybe 2 to 3% of total AWS revenues, which is very small. So, you know, going forward, that there's a massive opportunity in generative AI. So I think right now investors are already looking to see when, you know, they'll start to, you know, be at a $200 billion run rate, which, you know, potentially could happen in the next 7 to 10 years or so.
Yeah. And if we look at margins, it seems like Andy Jassy is sort of taking a page out of Mark Zuckerberg's book in looking for more efficiency. That's something that we really didn't see so much from the founder. Is this a step that you appreciate at your firm, and how important is it?
Yeah, I mean, the margin story is really what's been driving the stock over the last, say, 18 months or so. You know, this was a company in 2021 and 2022 that was free cash flow negative. And now this year, they're likely going to generate about $70 billion in free cash flow. And that includes a big step up in capital expenditures. That's really being driven by stronger operating margins. This quarter, operating margins were about 10.7%. A year ago, it was at just 3.7%. We see operating margins continuing to increase. You know, they have, I think, plenty more efficiencies left to generate in their retail business. Their advertising business, which is high margin, is growing at a really attractive clip. And then, you know, AWS, which is really their cash cow, is also growing at a pretty attractive clip. And in fact, something that we haven't talked about yet is, you know, AWS operating margins this quarter were 38%. That's the highest in the company's history. and that was, you know, another, you know, big standout. I don't think we'll see 38% AWS margins going forward, but that is something to call out.
It wasn't too long ago, one of the vulnerabilities of this company was CapEx. I mean, there was a time when Jeff Bezos just loved to spend money to try to build out the business. I think it's definitely a different era right now. But that doesn't necessarily mean that Amazon has no vulnerability. What would you be most concerned about as we move forward here and pay attention to this company?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I've been hearing from investors over the last few hours or so is, you know, is that we're in the beginning of this CapEx super cycle. And we're, you know, not just Amazon, but, you know, really all the big tech firms are rapidly investing in CapEx right now. But I think what's different for Amazon is that they can invest in CapEx, meaning significantly increase their CapEx, while also improving profit margins. Because, you know, like we talked about earlier, you know, profit margins were, you know, a few years ago, it was negative. And then, you know, last year it was very small. And now it's still continuing to grow. We talked about 10% operating margins this quarter. It'll likely continue to increase this year. So they can increase CapEx while also growing profit margins, which that's why I know I'm not overly worried that, you know, that CapEx will increase this year. We're estimating CapEx probably up 20% this year, about $64 billion, which is significant. And, you know, that won't pay off immediately, but it will pay off in the long term. But Amazon does have a good track record of generating good ROI off its investments. So we just have to wait to see when that'll happen.
So in terms of the economy weakening, we've seen a little bit of weakness in consumer confidence. And so obviously Amazon is quite leveraged to the consumer through its e-commerce business and also through ad sales. We haven't really talked about ad sales, but that's something we can talk about. But then in a certain sense, it's insulated somewhat from the economy by the cloud business, because it seems like the cloud business can churn along pretty well, even if the economy weakens. So in that sort of range that we're talking about, you know, the risks versus the benefits. And it seems like you clearly think that the company, you know, is sort of tilting toward opportunity rather than risk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, Amazon's not immune to some of the macro headwinds that we're seeing. But, you know, if you look at, I mean, just look at their e-commerce business. It grew, you know, first party e-commerce sales were up 7%. Year over year this quarter. You know, that's pretty strong. I cover a lot of the other big box retailers in the United States, like Walmart, Target. You know, no one's really growing at a 7% clip. And what's more interesting is that Amazon's actually also growing unit sales. So their growth is not just coming from higher prices, which, you know, a lot of other retailers are, you know, generating growth because of higher prices. Amazon's actually also generating unit growth, which is very encouraging. And they're also growing, you know, pretty well internationally as well. You have to remember, you know, Amazon's still relatively young in many markets around the world.
Before we let you go, quick question. Do we get a spinoff of either AWS or Prime Video here?
I don't see that happening anytime soon. I don't think that they will spin off that business. I think there's a lot of synergies between AWS and their retail business and their advertising business. And I think they'll do everything they can to keep these businesses intact.
All right, Arun, thanks very much for joining us. Arun Sundaram, Vice President, Senior Equity Analyst at CFRA.
The Capital Ideas Podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses like yours effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Now to another big legal story of the day. The founder of Binance, Changpeng Zhao, has been sentenced to 4 months in prison. Zhao was accused of allowing cyber criminals and terrorist groups to freely trade on Binance. That is the world's largest crypto exchange. Joining us for a closer look, Ava Benny Morrison is with us, Bloomberg legal reporter on the line from Seattle. Ava, good of you to join us. 4 months in prison, that feels like a slap on the wrist. Is that all that prosecutors were asking for?
No, prosecutors were actually pushing for a lot longer. They wanted to see CZ spend about 36 months in prison. That was well above what the federal sentencing guidelines stipulated and even what pretrial and probation had recommended. Pretrial and probation said that he should only face 5 months in prison. And of course, CZ and his lawyers were pushing for no prison time whatsoever and pushing for probation. But at the end of the day, the judge found that this was a very serious crime on the scale of Bank Secrecy Act violations. Because of what you mentioned earlier, this lapse meant that illicit actors like cyber criminals, terrorist groups, drug dealers could trade on Binance.
Yeah, it seems like the judge was, if not sympathetic, was at least pleased that there was a level of cooperation from the defendant. Can you walk us through some of the things he did on that front that might have led to that leniency?
Yes, CZ said that he had been cooperative with the government's investigation, which was going on for years. They were poring over the operations of Binance, looking at of how it was used by US users, whether it was registered in the US, which of course we know now that it wasn't. And so CZ said that he was always willing to accept responsibility for the mistakes that he made. And he actually directed Binance, the company he founded in 2017, to cooperate with the DOJ and to come up with some sort of resolution to end of the myriad of criminal and regulatory investigations that were going on. That, of course, late last year led to Binance paying a huge amount, $4.3 billion, to put an end to all of those investigations.
So, Ava, remind us how this started. I mean, as I recall, he wasn't even in the United States at the time this investigation was really heating up. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. Prosecutors had started looking at a whole range of crypto platforms and whether they were adhering to US financial regulations. And Binance, being the world's biggest crypto exchange, was obviously an attractive target. CZ lives in Dubai, and he was, as I said before, cooperating with the investigation and then instructed his lawyers to come up with some sort of plea agreement with the DOJ. Then he has traveled to the US voluntarily, he points out, from Dubai to America at the end of last year. And he actually highlighted this as a factor that should work in his favour to avoid prison time, because if he wanted, he had the means and the time to avoid this prosecution, because Dubai doesn't have the UAE doesn't have an extradition treaty with the US.
Yeah, and I think his lawyers even argued that he should get a lighter sentence because he can't serve time in a minimum security facility because he's not a U.S. citizen. So that's one interesting thing. And the other thing is, has he been ordered to surrender yet? Will he be able to go back to the to Dubai to bring his family over, or will he be summoned immediately?
There hasn't been a date set for when he has to surrender to the Bureau of Prisons. His lawyers and the pretrial and probation department are working that out. But he has requested to be designated to a federal facility here in Seattle. The way that these cases go, and based on our experience covering these matters, that should happen in maybe the next week to 2 weeks. So he seemed pretty eager to just get this sentence done and be able to return to Dubai to see his family.
How much of this prosecution, I'm curious, Ava, had to do with the DOJ wanting to make an example out of Zhao as a way of sending a message to the crypto industry?
I think the DOJ's very forceful suggestion that CZ faced 36 months in prison was definitely driven by a want to make an example out of him to the crypto industry. CZ is one of, if not the most recognizable figure in this industry. He's one of the world's richest men. He's worth about $36 billion at the moment. So they wanted to send a strong message, not only to this industry, but to high-level executives all across America, that this might just be a Bank Secrecy Act violation, but they will go after it forcefully.
Ava, thank you so much for making time for us. I'm sure it's been a busy day for you. Ava Benny Morrison, Bloomberg legal reporter, joining us from Seattle as we take a look at Changpeng Zhao, CZ, sentenced today to 4 months in prison. He was accused of allowing cyber criminals and terrorist groups to freely trade on the world's largest crypto exchange, Binance.
Joining us now on the program is Bill Adams, chief economist at Comerica Bank, to take a closer look at the U.S. economy and the predicament that the Fed finds itself in. Bill, is the Fed in a predicament here?
The Fed is certainly going to be unhappy after inflation, by pretty much every measure, overshot expectations in the first quarter of the year. It's kind of harder to find areas where inflation has behaved well in the first quarter than areas where it's picked up. You've got gas prices. You have food prices with the bird flu spreading in the United States, and core inflation, including home health care charges and hospital charges, has run hot. And then, as you mentioned, the employment cost index report out this morning, U.S. time, as well as house prices picking up in January and February. So really across the board, we've seen persistence of inflationary pressures, and the Fed is data dependent. And these data say it's not time to cut yet.
I'm wondering where we are in terms of stagflation. Is that something we really need to discuss more of?
We did see a slowdown in economic growth in the first quarter, but a lot of that slowdown was due to parts of GDP, parts of domestic demand and international demand that I think are likely to be one-offs. There was a big drag on first quarter GDP growth from businesses adding to inventories more slowly, from a larger trade deficit, and from the government increasing spending, but increasing it less than it had in the prior quarter. And I'm not so concerned about those as drivers of a slowdown over the business cycle. If you look at the parts of domestic demand that are most closely linked to the cycle, that's real final sales to private domestic purchasers. That increased at a 3.1% annualized pace in the first quarter, which is really still quite robust. So I think the real concern right now is just that inflation continues to run hot, and the economy, to my mind, has not slowed enough to bring inflation back under control. And I think the Fed is going to see that again as a mandate to keep their foot on the brake for a time being.
You know, one thing I'm a little curious about, we've had a lot of attention given to artificial intelligence in terms of supporting earnings to a certain degree from companies. But what about the economy? Have you been looking at all at whether or not artificial intelligence actually does anything for the economy?
This is a tricky topic for macroeconomists because it's probably going to slow up in the broad measures of the economy, think GDP, employment, productivity, with a long lag. The area where we are starting to see the impact of AI is on business surveys. So the Fed's Beige Book, as well as other business surveys that capture qualitative data about businesses, what they say they're doing with innovation and employment, you see several mentions in the latest Beige Book of businesses that have managed to reduce the size of their software development teams by adopting AI tools. One business mentioned in the Beige Book has shifted to using AI to develop their marketing materials, and none of their customers have complained yet. So they're sticking with that, no longer paying a marketing services company for those services. So I think you do see adoption in some parts of the economy in fits and starts. It's not adding up to enough yet to move the needle on overall productivity, but I think it's going to accelerate from here.
So yesterday we saw the Treasury ramping up its estimate for federal borrowing in the current quarter. Are you worried at all about the deficit rising?
I think the deficit is putting upward pressure on interest rates. And one way of thinking of that is that with the federal government running a deficit of 5 to 6% of GDP this year, there's a lot of domestic demand coming out of public spending. And that means that monetary restraint is more than it would be if fiscal policy were in a more neutral stance. So I think it's a contributor to why the Fed has been able to keep interest rates high, yet the domestic economy has held up well. And so that is one of the causes of the headwinds for capital intensive businesses, like the slowdown we've seen in multifamily housing starts in the last few months.
And just finally, for your take on inflation, it's very confusing in some ways, because if you look at shelter, it seems like rents being down a little bit is not reflected in the data that's currently out, and that there's a long lag there. And there are a lot of different things moving in there. Now with the employment cost index up, you know, we worry about that. Do you actually think that disinflation is still in place or no?
I think we do see signs of disinflation in a somewhat cooler labor market, and especially in a slower pace of turnover in the quits rate and in the hires rate, which is in the job openings and labor turnover survey, which we'll get in about 12 hours in the United States. And with people jumping jobs less, that means that the bigger wage increases that workers see when they switch to a new employer are a smaller share of the overall pie of wage increases.
All right, Bill, thanks so much for joining us. Bill Adams, Chief Economist, Comerica Bank.
This has been the Bloomberg Daybreak Asia podcast, bringing you the stories making news and moving markets in the Asia Pacific. Visit the Bloomberg Podcast channel on YouTube to get more episodes of this and other shows from Bloomberg. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen, and always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business App.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Meet Gary. Gary's about to become an Einstein in an instant.
Whoa, Einstein hair. I like it.
That's right, Gary, because you're using Salesforce powered by Einstein AI to connect data, predict business trends, generate personalized content, and wow customers.
I do feel a lot smarter.
Because you're not just Gary anymore. You're Gary, empowered by Einstein AI.
Did you hear that, team? I'm an Einstein.
Oh, can I get a selfie?
The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.